You're listening to 90.3 Near FM, Northside Today. Johnny Holmes here, and that was Simply Red, Something Got Me Started. Now, on Tuesday, for the second day in a row, 760 admitted patients in our hospitals had been waiting for beds, the worst days on record. Now, this figure has reduced. It reduced on Wednesday to about 621. However, it could reach 800 within days or weeks. I'm now joined with Dr. Laura Durkin, Vice President of Irish Hospitals Consultants Association, to tell us more about it. Good morning, Laura, and thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. Laura, first of all, tell us about the main cause of the crisis. Is it solely due to lack of beds, or are there, you know, other issues such as insufficient staffing or perhaps lack of organisation and planning within the HSE?
I suppose when you look at it, the major problem that we have is indeed the beds. We're 300 down on where we were 10 years ago. And the population of Ireland is ever increasing. And we're also seeing a scenario where vast quantities of our population are getting older. And this population have, you know, more healthcare needs. They stay longer in hospital when they present in crisis. And it really is a kind of a predictable surge in the need for inpatient beds. We have half the bed numbers that they have in Scotland, which has pretty much the same population as us. And the lowest consultant numbers in Europe and in the OECD. I suppose, you know, so I think that creates the kind of perfect storm where we have an increasing population of frail and elderly patients with complex healthcare needs who need inpatient care on a predictable basis. Now, flu, as we all know, tends to be a seasonal thing, and it happens pretty much every winter. Last year, we got off reasonably light from a flu perspective, so the ship just about stayed afloat. But this year, we knew from what was cycling in the southern hemisphere that the flu virus that was destined for us was a particularly severe strain, and that it was one that was hitting people quite hard. So I think the combination of a system that is at half mast in terms of capacity and also the kind of predictable winter surges that, as you know, happen every year. And I suppose my big concern now is that with the response that we've had in terms of beds, is that you and I may well be having the same conversation this time next year. You know, this is not a flash in the pan. This is a predictable winter phenomenon.
Yes. Which hospitals are worst affected?
So we see lots. So it kind of, you know, day on day, things tend to change a little bit. Certainly Cork and Limerick were very badly affected. And often what happens then is that, you know, things happen like cancellations of elective surgical activity. And then those patients are housed and you see a small dip in the numbers the following day. Limerick has had a particularly difficult time. I think mostly because of the reconfiguration of the hospitals in that region. Here in Beaumont, we actually have been doing reasonably well. We're the only hospital that managed to keep out of the red zone in terms of our numbers. But we are absolutely at bursting point in terms of our capacity on the wards at the moment. And I suppose it changes the hotspots around the country on a daily basis, depending on what's coming to their emergency departments. But sure, the truth is the emergency departments, they, you know, people are sick and they really are only presenting to our EDs when they're in crisis. So the people that I've been seeing over the last couple of days coming to the emergency departments are by no means coming with trivial illnesses. You know, they're coming with life-threatening complications from, you know, respiratory viruses, including the flu, infections, pneumonias, sepsis. It really is a little bit simplistic to suggest that any of these people, certainly the ones that I've seen, could ever have been managed in the community or by their primary care doctors. Most of them came from GP into the hospital, and they're really sick people, lots of them very elderly with kind of complex problems. So it is an inevitability, as the system currently stands, that these people will need to come to the hospital. And we saw in hospitals down the country that the knock-on effect of this was that other people who were waiting for life-saving operations were then moved from the books. And that also has a huge impact on those people who are waiting for their operations. Those, Johnny, are cancers. They're people with, you know, perhaps enlarging aortic aneurysms. They're people with serious health needs. And they were all, you know, the knock-on effect of the surges through the emergency department and the lack of beds is that those people end up cancelled. For those people and for their families, it's a really traumatic experience. I suppose for me, I look at that 760 earlier this week, and you know, when I face to face with those people, the experience of that patient is nothing short of complete misery. These are vulnerable people. And I suppose my question is that why there isn't more of a national outrage about this. You know, all of us are, the whole country seems to be up in arms about, you know, the recent historical commemoration that was suggested, but completely silent when presented with the suffering of our most vulnerable citizens. You know, it's a kind of a silence and accepting of, they're silent and accepting of a scenario where, you know, our emergency department situations are kind of, they're affronting the human rights of our most frail, sick and vulnerable people. Like the whole country was up in arms about water. We are outraged about the RIC, but we're in a scenario at the moment where we're accepting a medical service which doesn't have sufficient capacity for the population that it serves. And I look at the kind of political response to this, and I suppose my strong feeling is that bed capacity, emergency department reconfiguration, I really don't see those as political issues. I see those as medical decisions. You know, the number of beds needed by each service to provide care for their patients should be decided by the people at the front line who look after these patients. And I suppose I would see the role of the minister as being one where he provides us with political oversight, but it shouldn't be his job to be weighing in on every single bed in the country. These should be decisions that are made by doctors and made by the HSE. And we need a scenario where we, rather than kind of limp from scandal to scandal or crisis to crisis, we urgently need some stabilisation of what is a sinking ship. And that's going to be increasing our specialist numbers, getting people into post, and also like getting up our bed capacity numbers. You know, we had the National Development Plan recently. They said 780 beds by 2021. But then more recently, this was decreased to 480. And the truth is they may not even deliver on this. And this is a scenario where we're at a very minimum 2,500 beds below where we need to be in the acute system. So we really urgently need to see these beds being fast-tracked so that people can have an experience where when they access care, they get to the comfort of a bed. You know, we provide good healthcare, but the truth is these people are being nothing short of tortured on a trolley.
Yes. Actually, if you don't mind me saying, in Beaumont, I believe, it's become a situation that patients are lucky to even get a trolley, as many are waiting on chairs and sitting on them for 36 to 48 hours waiting just for a trolley, never mind a bed. So would you agree that the trolley crisis is not just a winter issue, but an all-year-round, everyday thing?
Oh, absolutely. So we see, you know, we get a little bit exercised by a peak in this, but we've seen these problems in July. You know, I was at bed escalation meetings in July, bed escalation meetings in August. This is a problem that exists all year round. And, you know, we get to maybe a peak or a crisis point and we all start talking about it. But this should be an issue that we talk about all the time because it affects all of us. And no matter what happens to us in life, at some point, unfortunately, we'll find ourselves in the back of an ambulance, most likely. At some point, we'll need to seek emergency care out of hours. And the place in this country where you go when that happens is your local emergency department. And for all of us to think that it doesn't affect us or, you know, that's not our problem, completely wrong. Because the way life goes, we start out life in a hospital and most of the time we end up at some point being there again. And you know, elective care and, you know, other things can happen in private hospitals. But the emergency department, the place people go if they have a stroke or a heart attack or if they are unlucky enough to be in a car crash or some form of trauma happens to them, that's to the local emergency department we go. And it's in all of our best interests that those emergency departments be well-oiled machines and that the patients who present to these emergency departments, as soon as they're admitted, that they go to a bed. And this allows the emergency department to then function as it should. Whereas where we're at presently, there's patients who are admitted to the hospital literally everywhere in the emergency department. And that then means that the doctors and nurses who are emergency doctor and nurses are unable to perform their role, mostly because they literally do not have the physical space in which to do it. And it has a knock-on effect on the efficiency of the services that are provided. And definitely, I agree with you. At times, people sit in chairs wanting a trolley. And the fact that I have patients on ward round saying to me on occasion, oh, doctor, is there any chance I'd be able to get a trolley? Like, that's absolutely terrible. But we've come to a scenario where people kind of accept that, and they shouldn't accept that. That's not normal. And, you know, I suppose nationally Beaumont is doing really well. So I can only imagine what some of the hospitals in other places, what scenario those patients must be faced with. And we should, the patients should speak out, the voters should speak out to say that, you know, none of this is normal and none of it is acceptable. We are a wealthy country. We should be doing better than this.
Yes, of course. Minister Harris has said that extreme overcrowding in our hospitals could not have been avoided. What's your view on that?
I think there is some truth in what he says. The reason it can't be avoided is that they have not put the beds in place for the patients to be housed. So, absolutely. And I worry that this time next year, there will be perhaps Minister Harris, perhaps another minister saying this cannot be avoided. Until they start to put capacity in the system, we will see this year after year. Until we increase our bed base, this will be an annual. And literally, I'm calling it an annual occurrence, but the truth is, it's a constant occurrence that we have overcrowding. Our hospitals are maxed out on capacity. So absolutely, I think there is an inevitability to what happened. But to put their hands up politically and say that they're faultless is completely wrong. We are literally, 10 years ago, we had 300 more beds. We need at least 2,500 more beds. I know a bed can't be magicked overnight, but until we put in the planning, we make the plans, we give the capital funding, we dig the foundations, we build the beds, we will be in this scenario, Johnny, year after year after year.
Can only imagine. The minister also says that most senior levels in HSE have been doing all they can, but would you not agree, Laura, that there's maybe a little bit of bureaucracy within the HSE that has a lot to do with the crisis?
I have to say, I've met Paul Reid. He's a great guy. He is doing a fabulous job, but there is a lot of what they do in the HSE that I have poor insight into and I don't really understand. So I don't really, those layers of bureaucracy within the HSE are not something that I really can say at the front line that I understand. But certainly they are busy and Paul Reid is doing a really great job. But they are also completely tied in that unless the government gives the capital funding for the projects and creates the beds, they cannot be magicked out of thin air. So the HSE in their kind of operations role where they're keeping things tipping over, they cannot, I suppose, create capacity in a scenario where the beds literally do not exist. So until we see the kind of big, until we start building the beds and creating the capacity, there's nobody going to be looking at a massive success story. And we will be in a scenario where we continue to laud minor achievements while the ship kind of sinks. So I don't blame anybody in the HSE. I really blame the kind of political ineptitude that has existed in terms of creating the capacity and making the beds for these patients. I actually don't think there's any complicated kind of underlying issues here. It literally is as simple as getting the beds, hiring the specialists, getting the patients through. I think that this could be done with some strong political will, but it's also going to take money. But by all accounts this year, Johnny, we have the money. We need to invest in long-term projects. Looking at, you know, taking things like the NTPF, where we pay money to private institutions to take people off public waitlists. Every time we do that, we should look at why we weren't able to service that patient in our public hospitals. So every time we send off a cataract to a private hospital or a knee or whatever procedure it is, we need to be reflective and say, why was it that we couldn't serve that person in their local hospital? And we need to then match that with investment in our services so that the next time the person needs something done, we say, you know what, we learned from our capacity issues and we have put the facilities in place so that we can serve the population. That, you know, this, I don't think that any of this is visionary. I think that this is pretty straightforward.
Well, the minister, breaking news in yesterday, he's due to appear at an emergency health committee meeting next Wednesday to address the crisis. So we'll see what comes out of that. Right, so we're going to leave it at that, Laura, unless, of course, there's anything else you'd like to add before we finish up.
Not at all. That's great. Thank you so much, Johnny.
You're most welcome. And thanks to you, Laura, for joining us today. And all the very best to you. And take care.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Now, that was Dr. Laura Durkin from the IHCA. She's the vice president and she was talking about the number of patients on trolleys in our hospitals and the HSE crisis in general.